is Volkov House. Back in 1765, Anatoly Volkov passed away, leaving his estate to his son and daughter. Now, Nestor and Dina Volkov had both survived ugly divorces. Neither had much money, even with their inheritances, so the pair returned to their ancestral home to make ends meet. The crowd shifted, studying the home and trying to picture the downtrodden siblings returning with their tails tucked between their legs. Nestor was a bit of a bookworm, both the siblings were, and one night he came home from work, pulled an old favorite from the house library, and settled into his favorite chair while Dina started supper. Bang! I clapped my hands, and the folks in the front row jumped. A single gunshot blasted through the library. Dina was so shocked that she tipped the pan on the stove, and the oil she was using to fry pork chops spilled on her. Dripping grease, she ran into the living room and found her brother sitting in his chair with a book spread over his lap, a shotgun in his hands, and the back of his skull decorating the living room wall. Shocked gasps rose, and I suppressed a chuckle, because that never got old. Earlier that day, he had received a letter from his ex-wife, alerting him of her impending nuptials. Still in love with her, he took his own life, rather than live without hope of ever winning her back. Searching window after window, their gazes touched each frame in search of the library. 2 weeks later, Dina was home alone reading in her bed, recovering from her burns. I clapped my hands again. Bang! I was rewarded by a young woman's shriek. Dina heard the sound again, coming from downstairs. Figuring it must be a heartless prank by some of the neighborhood kids, she jumped out of bed, ready to set them straight. Except nightgowns in those days were long, frilly affairs, and she tripped over her hem and fell against her nightstand. She knocked over the kerosene lantern by her bed, and her gown caught fire. She burned to death alone in the house. By the time the neighbors saw the flames, it was too late. Volkov House was nothing but ashes. A heavy silence blanketed the crowd, and I thrived on the high of knowing I had shaken them. "If the house burned down, then what are we looking at?" my first skeptic of the night asked. "Well, the thing is, Volkov House was a local institution. It was the most beautiful, most luxurious, and most extravagant home in town, and the mayor had his eye on it for a long while, hoping the destitute heirs would consent to sell it." I painted on a frown. When he heard about the tragic deaths of the Volkovs, he set about convincing prospective buyers the property was haunted by Nestor and Dina's ghosts. The property went to auction, and with no one else to bid against him, the lot and the charred skeleton of the house went for $500. Someone whistled. That was a steal. Yes, it was. I tapped the bronzed plaque, marking the place as a historical landmark, one best known for the mayor who went on to be governor, and pitched a hissy to have his home declared the state manse. He failed, by the way. Mayor Royard, for he was at the time, rebuilt the home from partial plans found in the builder's records and redecorated it down to the gold-tasseled couch cushions from memory. Creepy? Very, I agreed with absolute conviction.
Is this the part where you claim the locals report hearing a gunshot every night at midnight?
A thickly accented voice sliced through the crowd.
Or where you tell us passers-by have seen a flaming woman pounding on the windows, trying to escape the fire.
The gathering parted to reveal a man who wore his charcoal suit with the ease of a businessman. But violence beat beneath his skin, the same as mine. A knowing passed between us, and I felt his awareness of me as other to the tips of my toes. The expensive threads matched his thundercloud eyes, and his wavy hair was so black the moon lent him blue highlights. He strode forward, and I leaned in, two opposite sides of a magnet caught in helpless attraction. His eyes, predator sharp, searched my face for some unknown revelation. He invaded my personal space, crowding me against the fence. The fragrance of his skin reminded me of old coins and crushed rosemary.
"Have you been on this tour before?"
The words tore from me on a ragged whisper. Had he been in my group earlier, I would have noticed. My knees would have liquefied sooner.
"No."
His tumultuous silver gaze swept over me, lingering on my throat.
"I overheard you last night."
I palmed the side of my neck to get his eyes off my pulse.
"Come again?" "I'm Danil Volkov."
His cocky smile bared straight white teeth. No fangs in sight.
"This is my home."
Had his family name meant nothing to me, I would have recognized his breed. Vampire. The intoxicating pheromones he was tossing my way, his lure, had me ready to mule for his kiss.
"I apologize."
I flattened my spine against the warming metal.
"I didn't realize you were in town."
I peered around him, aiming my parasol at a stop sign marking our next turn.
"Why don't you guys hang out over there and give me a moment alone with Mr. Volkov?"
The name raised more than a few eyebrows. Afraid they might be trespassing, or perhaps taking me too seriously about the shotgun warning, they scurried off to give us privacy. Cricket orchestrated our tours to cause as little disruption to the locations and owners as possible, since pissing off fourth-generation locals meant stern calls from the Chamber of Commerce. She would not be thrilled to hear about the disruption Mr. Volkov's appearance caused in tonight's haunted history lesson, or the fact she would lose the crowning gem of her downtown tour in the interim.
"I arrived 3 days ago."
A smile tugged at the corner of his mouth, and his canines sharpened before my eyes.
"Perhaps I will see you here tomorrow night, around the same time."
"That's not a great idea, for too many reasons to count.
I'm not what you think I am." "Oh, yes, you are."
He lowered his head, the tip of his nose trailing along my jaw. His lips moved against my skin, the warmth of his exhale puffing in my ear.
"You called to me, necromancer."
Breath hitching, I swore I felt the rasp of teeth against my skin.
"I don't practice." "Liar," he breathed. "I smell the grave on your skin."
"I should go." Volkov might as well have been carved from stone for all the give when I pushed him. "I have a tour to, guide." A cool smile bent his mouth as he let me escape.
"I will see you again."
"I'll talk to my boss about removing your house from the tour." I stumbled toward the scattered group waiting on the corner, impatience and curiosity mingling on their faces.
"I don't want to disturb you." "You do not disturb me."
His nostrils flared one last time.
"Good night."
The single damning word tumbled past my lips without consulting my brain.
"Greer." "Greer,"
he repeated, possessing my name as if I had given it to him for safekeeping. Sneakers glued to the sidewalk, I stood there while he let himself through the gate, then disappeared inside his house. Only when the front door closed did the others rejoin me. Smoothing my skirts, I faced them with a pasted-on smile meant to reassure.
"Now, if you'll all follow me."
I set off at breakneck speed to the next destination, desperate to put distance between Volkov and me. The rest of the night passed in a different kind of blur. When I reached the point of, "Hey, you made it back," I collected my tips, waved off my group, and made a beeline for HQ. I was counting on Amelie's teensy obsession with the new guide, who was about as theatrical as a moth-eaten curtain, to delay her. Sure enough, I found her all but swooning over his historically inaccurate retelling of one of my favorite ghost stories. Come on. I hooked my arm through hers on my way past and hauled her into the parlor where the female haints changed. We need to talk. She stumbled after me. Boaz made me promise. This is not about that. Though that talk was coming. I saw something tonight. Based on your reviews on Yelp, I'd say you make sure you see something every night. She disentangled from me and started unpinning her hair from its elaborate twist. Not that I'm jealous or anything. Except I am. Totally. My skin is green under this dress. Envy was a sore topic between Amelie and me. Always had been, so I pretended not to hear. I'm serious. Okay. Her fingers hesitated before she unspooled her first curl. What happened? I met Daniel Volkov. She barked out an incredulous laugh. Wait, you're serious? She bared her teeth and tapped her canines. Like an honest-to-God Volkov? A descendant of the guy who built the Crazy Pants murder house? I bobbed my head like a juicy apple floating in a water-filled barrel. Wow. She leaned her hip against the sink. Did he speak, or did he just glare from the porch and shake his cane at the kids on his lawn? Oh, yeah. He spoke all right. Recalling all the things he'd said, the heat of his breath on my skin raised goose flesh. He's not grandpa material either. He's mid-20s or early 30s. At least that's how he appears. Clapping her hands together, she squealed, "Tell me everything." I repeated him word for word and watched her eyebrows ratchet higher and higher toward her hairline. "You didn't give him your last name?" She smacked her forehead with the heel of her palm, illustrating where I had picked up the habit. "Or your phone number?" She bit her bottom lip. "Maybe you should have given him your number, if he's that hot." Best-case scenario is he's a vampire. Necromancers are like catnip to them. And Volkov had already pawed me once tonight. The options get worse from there. The undead came in several flavors, and I wasn't about to taste Volkov to determine his. He struck me as the kind of guy who bit back. Hard. Vamps were common in necromantic society. Not unexpected, since they were our creations, not to mention our bread and butter. But there were vampires, and then there were vampires. I got the feeling he fell into the latter category. Your basic undead are created when a necromancer tethers a human soul with very, very deep pockets to its body after death. Those vampires are classified as resurrections, humans resuscitated by necromantic magic, and they raise as the undead with a thirst for human blood. They come equipped with a lure, a sensuous magnetism that helps them ensnare prey, but only the oldest among them are a threat to necromancers. We have a natural immunity to them. So, pretty classic by horror movie standards. Those don't last forever, and most go insane and have to be put down before the half-century mark. Then you've got the last seeds. Turns out sperm can stay alive inside a dead man's body for up to 36 hours. Freezing the swimmers doesn't work. Magic and medicine don't always see eye to eye on such matters, but that still gives resurrected vamps plenty of time to knock up willing surrogates, or human partners, for the purpose of creating offspring. For a fee, of course. A steep one. Last seeds are just that. A male vampire's last drops of humanity preserved for all eternity in his child. They're also so rare and so cosseted by their vampire clans as to be fabled. Last seeds are immortal from birth and stop aging in their 30s. The society allows them to live because, in addition to being rare, they're also sterile, making their population even easier to control. Otherwise, there's no way those high society stuffed shirts would allow the last seeds and their irresistible lures to traipse around ensnaring necros willy-nilly, as I suspected Volkov had done to me. Stashed in the bottom drawer are ghosts, ghouls, and wraiths, byproducts of violent deaths, resuscitations gone wrong, and dark magic used to take lives. The creation of psychopomps were a specialization as well. I won't even lie. Necros who focus on pets make all the money. We've all seen people carrying teeny tiny toy dogs around in designer purses. Offer a rich owner the chance to give Mr. Fluffy Lumpkins a second leash on life, and cha-ching! Even the Fae deigned to bargain with us for the lives of their most beloved companions. I got hot flashes just thinking about all that cold, hard cash. Despite all appearances to the contrary, necromancy was a lucrative field, regardless of your specialty. Practitioners made bank, but skilled assistants, those without criminal records, earned more than I would see in a human lifetime. How the mighty have fallen. I'm kidding, Greer. Sheesh, give me some credit. I might be low society, but I'm not human. Her sobering words brought my attention swinging back to her. Volkov would have recognized your last name. Maud had been famous in her own right. Me? I was more infamous. Not quite the same thing. You were smart to protect yourself. We have no idea how the society as a whole, let alone the Undead Coalition, will react to the news of your release once it trickles down. She worked 3 more bobby pins loose from her hair. Boaz will start knocking heads together if any of the factions take exception to your pardon, and that will get messy fast. She winked. And that's not counting what I'll do. The cold fingers of dread traced a line down my spine. Amelie, you can't... I'm not afraid of the society, and they don't even know I exist. I'm too far below their notice. Bitterness tinged her voice. The title of assistant might have stung my pride, but she burned for even that much respect from our peers. Can you imagine if they did try to silence me? Actually, I could, easily. After all, they'd done a bang-up job of muzzling me. Rumor has it that poor Amelie Pritchard took on a ruthless secret society and was silenced for her daring. She strode toward one of the dressing booths and pushed aside the curtain as though she were opening a door. Amelie was shoved down 3 flights of stairs by Matilda Bolivar at Sorrel Weed House while leading a tour, and now she haunts this very house. It's said that only people she once guided can see her, and that she awaits them to join her as she tours the afterlife. I cracked up at her ridiculousness. You're horrible. I think the word you're looking for is hilarious. You're not the only one with Yelp reviews, you know. I pinched my lips closed to prevent more snark from slipping free. So, what are you going to do about the vamp? Tell Cricket to remove his house from the tour routes and avoid his street like the plague? I approve of this plan. She cleared her throat delicately. Speaking of avoidance... Yes, yes, I saw your brother tonight. The skin of my throat tingled in memory of his wide palm wrapping the delicate column like a necklace. Most of him, anyway. Blood rushed from her cheeks, and she leaned against the nearest wall for support. He made me promise. Did he honestly believe it would make any difference to me? I picked at the worn lace on the front of my dress. I never thought I'd see him, or you, again. Does he think I'm that shallow? He's a man, and men are 90% pride. She chewed on her thumbnail. And I think... Even if he doesn't want to admit it, he was punishing you. He had no idea what was happening to you inside. She let the sentence fade. He must have figured it was only fair you had no idea how bad things had gotten out here for him either. He tried to kiss me, I blurted. This is Boaz we're talking about. Amelie didn't blink. What did you expect? For him to ignore the fact I'm a grown woman until the day he died? Probably from having sex with a set of triplets half his age? She didn't disagree. Do you remember how you two met? I narrowed my gaze. You're not helping his case here. Picture it. Her tour guide voice came back in full force. The playground. Kindergarten. Me and you. Sitting on the swings at recess. Eating apple slices instead of our sour candy straws. Because even then, Mom didn't want me to live my best life. Boaz steps out the double doors, hops down the steps, and walks right up to you. He stuck out his hand and... He basically karate chopped me in the chest, I protested. I wasn't holding on to the chains. I was eating my apple. I fell. The facts are these. He walked up to you, and you hit the dirt on your back with your legs sticking straight up in the air. She snickered. He's been trying to get you back there ever since. He's got plenty of other girls in the dead bug position. So many I'd lost count of how my heart broke each time he brought a new girl home on his arm. He just wanted another specimen to add to his collection. Having nursed me through many of those late-night crying jags, I recognized her world-class diversion techniques. All he'd had to do was crook a finger, and I would have been his for the asking. We both knew that. Heck, all three of us did. And that made the shame of my open secret so much worse. Amelie flounced over, bumped hoop skirts with me in solidarity, and I started pulling on her laces. You were 15 when he noticed you were a girl and not just his kid sister's best friend. She clicked her tongue. He was 18. You weren't ready for sex, and he'd just figured out he could sweet-talk his way into a girl's panties and what to do when he got there. She shuddered at the thought. He was a decent guy, but he was still a hormonal teenager. He wasn't ready to give up his new favorite hobby while he waited for you to mature. But has he matured? The searing intensity in him when he ticked off his reasons for leaving still smoldered in my memory. But Boaz was blessed with a silver tongue, and he had slipped it down way too many throats for me to believe mine was anything special. Boaz doesn't come home often, and he never stays long. Her casual shrug didn't fool me for a minute. She was close to her brother, and she must miss him something fierce. Part of me hopes having you back home will anchor him. She rubbed the spot over her breastbone. The other part knows in order for you to heal, you need to figure yourself out first. She dipped her chin to hide the moisture pooling in her eyes. But I know how determined he can be. He won't stop until he gets what he wants. And it terrifies me that it's you. I'm worried if he cuts and runs again, if he breaks your heart for real this time, that I'll lose you both. I crossed to her and gathered her in my arms, ignoring the dampness spreading across my shoulder. I don't know what I want for breakfast most mornings, let alone who I want to share it with. No matter how solid Boaz had felt trapped between my thighs, Amelie was right. I might hide from my problems, but he had a bad habit of running away from his, and I was tired of being the reason he avoided his home and family. Maybe it was time both our inner teenagers grew up before we ruined a good thing. The late-late tour leaves in a few. I need to get out there and twirl my parasol before Cricket has a coronary. I waited until Amelie peeled out of her corset before I turned around. See you tomorrow? Call if anything else creepy happens. She pointed a warning finger at me. I mean it. I will. I curtsied and unlocked the door on my way out. Promise. On my way downstairs, I ducked into Cricket's empty office and left a note on her desk about the Volkov heir's mysterious return, then slipped back into the parking lot with a sigh as cool air teased my skirt. Sunlight bathing my face was nice, but give me the kiss of the moon, the call of nightbirds, the smell of light extinguished, of the darker world rousing to wakefulness any day. The ardent cry of a mockingbird caught my attention, and I glanced up at the lightning-struck Bradford pear tree leaning over the entryway. The pale gray bird perched on a charred limb, deep in shadow that ought to have concealed him, chest fluffed out as it completed a pitch-perfect impersonation of Cricket's car alarm. But I saw him, and when he noticed that, he took personal offense and flew away. Enhanced night vision came with the necromantic package. We had evolved alongside the vampires we created, both of us embracing nocturnal lifestyles, us through choice, them through necessity. Vamps wouldn't go up in flames if exposed to sunlight, but the effects weren't pretty. Maid vamps rose with solar urticaria, an allergy to UV radiation, while born vamps developed a less severe form of photosensitivity similar to polymorphous light eruption, another form of sun allergy. Theories abounded as to why the vampire population was afflicted. The most prevalent theory, the one printed in our textbooks, was that because Hecate was a goddess associated with the moon and necromancers were her children, that our magic bound them to the dark, to her whims. As I hadn't believed in gods of any kind for a long time now, I had no opinion on the topic. Careful to avoid the street where Volkov House sat, I guided 14 brave souls down a secondary route where I whiled away the early morning hours. Once the last slightly wobbly patron had pressed damp bills into my palm, I headed inside to change. I met another tour guide in the dressing room, and we stripped each other with the eagerness of two virgins under the bleachers at homecoming. Amelie's warning about keeping her posted about creepy goings-on rang in my ears when I arrived home and found an unexpected guest waiting in my driveway on the wrong side of the fence. I parked Jolene, palmed an ash stake from a hidden compartment under the seat, then closed the garage and joined him.
"Can I help you?"
"Greer Woolworth?"
The stranger eased into a sliver of moonlight, his skin flawless, his gaze fathomless. His presence weighted me in place, and for the second time in one night, I felt myself being measured by predatory eyes, though these held none of Volkov's primal attraction. A maid vampire, then.
"Can we talk?"
"It's late, and I'm tired."
And I had a healthy sense of self-preservation these days.
"We'll have to do this some other time."
Point to him, he stepped aside and allowed me to reach the porch.
"I represent someone eager to make your acquaintance."
A foreboding chill rippled down my arms, and I clenched the stake tighter.
"I have enough friends, thanks."
"Aren't you curious why you were released from Atramentus?"
He strolled forward with a spring in his step.
"Only the worst of our criminals are sentenced to that pit, and only after lengthy deliberation. You were a child when they closed the gate behind you."
16,
the youngest inmate in its long and miserable history. "And, rumor has it, you had no trial at all."
The moisture wicked from my tongue.
"Shut it down. Shut it down.
You are the sole exception any grand dame has ever made. A singular pardon."
"Why?"
He tapped the side of his nose.
"That debt would make me nervous if I were you."
The ground trembled beneath me as the bomb he'd dropped detonated. I should have probed the ragged edges of my personal miracle before now, but I had been all too happy to slap a bandage over the wound and pretend I wasn't slowly bleeding to death from 1,000 cuts. I had been living a small life, a quiet life, a safe life since my release. A But safety was an illusion, wasn't it? The hand that had guided me into the light could just as easily shove me tumbling back into the dark. The Grande Dame had spared me. I ought to feel grateful. Instead, a feverish heat swept chills over me. I'm going to bed now. Turning my back on him gave me the willies as I gripped the front doorknob. I was still holding the brass sphere when his hand landed on my shoulder in a touch meant to ask for my attention. I barely had time to register the potential threat before Wooly used me as a conduit, zinging an electrical charge through me and into him. I whirled around as the vampire was blasted clear off the porch and tumbled across the lawn, landing in a tight crouch that spoke of feline reflexes. "Night, Greer," he said, a chuckle in his voice, as though the vaults had tickled his funny bone. I slipped inside and locked the door behind me. 2 vampire sightings in 1 night. What were the odds this was a coincidence? Slim to none. Emphasis on the none. Say he was right about the Grande Dame pardoning me. What did she want in return? And could I afford to give it to her? 3. I woke at dusk, curled in a ball in my usual corner, with salt drying in itchy tracks on my cheeks. A horrible weight in my gut kept me from dry heaving, and I started regretting my policy of not talking about what had happened to me. Even one person could help me sort through what was real and what was imagined. What had been forgotten? So many years spent reliving the seconds that had cost me my freedom had both burned those moments into my mind's eye and faded them after so many viewings. What I remembered I didn't trust, and what I had been told in Atramentris I believed even less. Talking probably wasn't the worst idea I'd ever had, but who did I wreck with the burden of those memories? The man who had offered me his unconditional support? Or the woman who would never refuse me if I asked her to prop me up? The man who had suffered his own horrors? Or the woman left behind to imagine them? Boaz or Amelie? And could I ever look either of them in the eyes again after? I didn't know, and until I did, they were both safe from me calling in any favors. Determined to check at least one item off my to-do list before work, I hauled myself up the narrow stairs into the stuffy attic and rummaged through a lifetime's worth of accumulations until I located the antique cage Keat once called home and its matching base. That segued into me dusting the chandeliers and ended with me falling down in sweaty exhaustion onto my bed, thus dooming me to laundry detail. Hours later, still dressed in cut-off shorts, a tank top with a hole exposing my navel and half my right side, I plucked at the itchy yellow dish gloves encasing my hands. Suds climbed up my elbows because I failed at mixing the proper water-to-mopping solution ratio, and I worried more than once I might be making a bigger mess than I was cleaning. Factor in my frizzy ponytail, the bangs plastered to my forehead, and the allergies causing my eyes to redden and itch. And I had reached the mecca of sexiness that promises you'll run into your smoking hot ex if you leave the house. I didn't have an ex. I guess that's why I didn't even have to leave the house to get run into. The doorbell rang out in a clear, strong note, one of Wooly's all-clear chimes. Secure in the knowledge whoever awaited me wasn't the kidnappy vampire from last night, I tossed my sponge in the bucket to go investigate. Palms braced on the door, I stuck my eye to the peephole and sucked in a sharp breath. The man standing on my porch, hands folded in front of him, had me fighting back a panic attack, because he wasn't a man at all, really. "Are you insane?" I glared up at the foyer chandelier. "You let him on the porch?" The light brightened and dimmed, the Wooly equivalent of a shrug. After ripping off the gloves, I tossed them near the other supplies, then smoothed a sweaty hand over my hair before opening the door. "Mr. Volkov." An unassuming male dressed in a dark suit stood behind him and to his left.
He closed the large black umbrella he must have used to escort Volkov onto my porch, then made himself scarce. I hadn't even noticed it was raining again, but that explained why my hair was crackling like I'd stuck my finger in a light socket. This was Georgia humidity at its finest. Volkov stared at the crown of my frizzy head, sweeping his gaze down my frayed outfit. He lingered over my legs for what felt like hours, a mathematician going for the mental recitation of pi.
Ms. Woolworth.
Fiddlesticks. Eyes are up here, bud. Walking between 5 and 15 miles 5 nights a week kept my calves and thighs toned, but not many people got the chance to admire them, thanks to my voluminous skirts. Uneasy with his gaze on my bare skin, I snapped my fingers to snag his attention. How did you find me?
I followed your scent,
he said, as if tracking me like a bloodhound was a totally reasonable answer. Okay. Shifting to my left, I blocked the entrance to the house. And you're here... why?
What are your plans for lunch?
His attention lingered on my throat. Lunch for necros tended to occur around midnight, with dinner being served around 6 in the morning. Breakfast, for those who indulged, was usually a sunset affair. Though it was hours too early for lunch, I had abstained from breakfast due to my upset stomach, so brunch was sounding good right about now. I'll probably make a sandwich. I had one scoop of peanut butter in the jar, 2 squirts of jelly in a bottle, 1 square of processed cheese, and a few slices of bread. I had done a little of my own math and decided 1 PB&J and 1 grilled cheese would hit the spot until I went shopping. Volkov stood there, an air of expectation suspending a single moment into many. Would you like to join me? To my knowledge, no vampire had stepped foot inside Woolworth House during my stay with Maud. I wondered if today would prove the exception. What about this one had piqued Wooly's curiosity, especially considering her violent reaction to the one from last night? His regal nod indicated a certain expectation I had to nip in the bud, and soon. He attempted to cross the threshold with his confident strides, but a burst of ward magic from Wooly suspended him in the doorway while she conducted a thorough evaluation. I didn't rush her decision. I was interested in her assessment as well. He took a fumbled half-step back, the house trying to gently shove him out, but he pressed forward with a determined scowl, swinging his narrowed gaze toward me, and shut the door behind him as if that might prevent his premature eviction. Don't look at me. She's the boss. I gestured to the house around us. I just live here.
The rumors are true, then.
He examined the entryway as though expecting a ghost to walk through the walls and boop him on the nose for being a bad vampire.
The house is haunted.
Yep. That was mostly the truth. Close enough for my conscience, anyway.
Do you know the identity of your ghost?
Genuine curiosity guided his perusal.
Is there more than one?
Maud isn't here, if that's what you're asking. Had he known who I was last night? All signs pointed to yes. That would explain his interest in me. Still want that sandwich?
Of course.
Pivoting on my heel, I led him toward the kitchen. On my way past the bucket, I stepped in a patch of fizzing suds, and my foot shot out from under me. I flung out my arms and braced for an impact that never came.
I have you.
Warm breath fanned my throat as his arm cinched around my middle.
You should be more careful.
I breathed in the scent of his skin and lost my train of thought as that same magnetism from last night flipped switches in my brain. The tension thrumming in me uncoiled until I melted against him. Giddiness frothed in my mouth, and I had to swallow giggles. Cleaning the floor. It was dirty.
I see.
He swiped a dollop of bubbles off my thigh, rubbing the film between his fingers while I prayed to every god I had ever read about that I'd shaved the night before, or even the previous week. Work was my one social outlet, and a hoop skirt hid a multitude of sins.
The kitchen is this way?
Mm-hmm. I would have said most anything to keep him talking. His accent was kind of sexy.
You did not hit your head.
His accent thickened as though he had plucked the thought right out of my mind.
I got you.
The kitchen is this way. There. I sounded perfectly normal. Hey, whoa! I flailed in his grip as he lifted me against his chest and started walking. You can put me down now.
And risk you slipping again?
He strode through the wetness and bubbles without sliding an inch. His shoes were quality leather, expensive, and murky suds were bursting on them. Once in the kitchen, I put up a token struggle that caused the corners of his eyes to crinkle. I wasn't going anywhere until he released me, and we both knew it. Put me down, I said again, hating the breathless catch to my voice. Please.
As you wish.
He set me on my feet again and began a slow examination of the kitchen.
You have a lovely home.
Thanks. My dreamy tone evaporated once he crossed the room. As my head cleared, blood rushed into my cheeks over the damsel routine I'd pulled. His lips curved at the sight, and my stomach quivered. Touch must be the key to his lure. Good to know. How do you feel about grilled cheese?
I haven't had a grilled cheese since I was a boy.
He studied the ingredients as I placed them on the counter, as though each were a foreign object. The processed cheese, in particular, seemed to fascinate him. Then consider me your walk down memory lane. I patted the island, and he took the hint and sat on one of the bar stools. Can I get you something to drink? Almost on reflex, he flicked a glance at my throat, and I swallowed, audibly, but he just chuckled.
I do not take what is not freely given.
He stacked his forearms on the marble countertop.
Do not fear me.
Can I get back to you on that? I started preheating my pan. You're the first last seed I've met. Volkov canted his head to one side.
How can you tell?
Twice now you've made my brain melt at a touch. Made vamps can't hook me with their lures. A fact he ought to know, unless it was me he was testing. Yeah, that seemed more likely. While he mulled over his response, I poured him a glass of lemonade. Our fingers brushed when I passed it to him, and a flash of heat swept through my limbs too fast for me to do more than gasp before he ensnared me. Sweat beaded on my forehead and rolled stinging tracks into my eyes. The cord powering my brain disconnected with a pop, and I twirled down the path to La La Land. I was hot, burning up, ready to peel off my clothes and dance in the sprinklers. Summer in the South was a killer. I really ought to crank up the AC, or crack a window, or stick a palm frond in his hand. A palm frond, the distant voice of reason echoed. Do you hear yourself? It's not even summer.
Apologies.
As he withdrew, so did the urge to strip naked and jiggle on the front lawn for his entertainment.
I had to be certain you understood how fast the touch from one such as me can ruin you.
Where I come from, it's considered bad manners to brainwash your host. I scrambled backward until my butt hit the fridge, wondering what the heck Wooly had gotten me into with him. Explain yourself or get out. I'm good with either.
I have a gift for you.
He produced a powder blue jewelry box from his suit jacket and slid it across the counter to me so I wouldn't have to risk an accidental touch.
Open it. Please.
Wooly? I asked for her opinion. This was your bright idea. The lights flared in response,
and the fridge hummed soothingly behind me. Trusting she wouldn't steer me wrong, I palmed the box and lifted the lid. You shouldn't have. A ruby-red bangle rested on a bed of white velvet. I tilted it to inspect the intricate metal clasp, and an air bubble disrupted the solid color of what I realized was a clear tube filled with tinted fluid.
Is that blood?
Yes.
The tips of his fangs showed as he spoke.
Mine, to be precise.
You really shouldn't have, I repeated.
Try it on, he urged.
I can't possibly accept this highly disturbing and inappropriate bangle. But I appreciate the sentiment. I know what the gift of blood means to your people. This is too generous.
This is not an act of sentimentality.
He gestured toward the box again.
Please, try it on. There's something I wish to show you.
The lights overhead burned brighter in encouragement. Here goes nothing. I pinched the bangle between my fingers and examined its curve. Glass doesn't bend without breaking, so what I'd first assumed was a hinged clasp must be merely decorative. At Volkov's urging, I slid the bangle over my hand and yelped as it pinched my wrist. No, not pinched. Pierced. I'm trying very hard not to stake first and ask questions later. Too bad I had returned the ash stake to Jolene. I would have to knife him and run if things got ugly. The sharp pain receded, and the bangle slid higher on my arm. What just happened?
Take my hand.
He splayed his fingers, waiting.
What's an ounce more faith?
The door to the fridge opened, nudging me forward. Our palms slid against each other, and the urge to naked polka never emerged. His skin was warm, smooth. His fingers meshed with mine, his thundercloud eyes intent on me. A line appeared between his brows, as though he were deep in thought, but that was the only outward sign of his concentration. This gives me immunity to your kind. I dropped his hand and twirled it aside to check the puncture marks on my wrist. Gone. Healed in a blink. Why would you surrender the greatest weapon in your arsenal? The real question was, why did he think I was deserving of his gift? I was no one. Nothing. The ashes of a once bright future. Where was the benefit for him?
I'm offering you an alliance with Clan Volkov.
I shook my head to clear the ringing in my ears. Why would you possibly want an alliance with me? Stripped of my title as the Woolworth heir, I had no position, no money, and no worth as a bargaining chip in any alliance. Factor in the years spent with magical restraints grounding my powers in Atramentus, and I was little more than a human to boot.
Trust me.
His mouth crooked to one side.
Soon you'll be drowning in such offers. I mean for mine to be the first and most generous.
I don't understand. Genuine pity darkened his eyes.
I'm not at liberty to explain.
I can't accept an offer without knowing the consequences. I started to remove his gift, but his hand stilled me. I can't accept this either.
I'm not asking for an answer now. Only that you consider me.
He tapped the bangle.
This is all the protection I can offer until you decide. Please, wear it. It will keep you safe.
From him, went unsaid. The odds of another last seed wanting a piece of me were incalculable. I can't make any promises. I would need a second opinion before I removed the darn bangle, let alone promoted it to daily accessory status. Once bitten, twice shy, and all that. But I will consider your request.
That's all I can ask.
His quick smile was nice, tinged with triumph I didn't understand,
but not bone-meltingly irresistible.
Except, might I still trouble you for that sandwich?
That I can do. I set about preparing our meal, falling into the comfortable routine while my mind whirred. This gift must have been the reason Wooly allowed him entrance in the first place. Did that mean she wanted me to accept his alliance or take the gift and run? Times like these, I really wished she had writing skills above kindergartner level. Was this the only reason you came to town?
No, I have other business matters to attend while I'm here.
He traced a vein in the granite countertop with his finger, and it wasn't a stretch to imagine that same touch on my throat.
Perhaps I could engage your services for the night.
I burned my palm on the pan I was heating. Come again?
You are a guide, yes?
He quirked an eyebrow.
I am not familiar with the area. I would appreciate someone with your qualifications to show me around town.
You're a long way from home, huh? At his puzzled expression, I elaborated. Your accent.
Ah, yes.
A grin told me he was well aware of how it affected the ladies.
I was born in Nizhny.
He corrected himself.
Nizhny Novgorod, Russia.
I sliced a tablespoon of butter and let it hit the pan with a sizzle.
How did you end up all the way in Savannah, Georgia? My mother passed away recently.
I'm sorry to hear that. His father was a maid vampire, his mother human, for him to be an LS, meaning that Volkov's 20-something appearance might be an accurate indication of his true age.
We weren't close.
He shifted in his seat to study the photos on the wall, all pictures of me and Maud, some including a somber Linus and our escapades.
Not like it appears you were with your family.
Family was a complicated subject for me, and not one I was eager to discuss. Was Volkov House part of your inheritance?
Yes.
He returned his attention to me.
I'd heard stories of my mad relative and seen pictures of his home. When it passed into my hands, I was tempted to donate it to the town to be used for recreational purposes.
What changed your mind? I finished browning the grilled cheese to perfection, plated it, sliced it horizontally, and shoved the dish toward Volkov.
A situation arose. My mother was a woman of many secrets, and some were revealed after her death. Much like the house, I inherited other responsibilities as well.
A grim line flattened his lips.
I hoped that coming here might give me insight into what my obligations truly are.
A small part of me wondered if that situation was me. I get that. I pulled my bread from the toaster and slathered on the PB&J, then cut off the crust. Some responsibilities our loved ones leave behind are too great for us to shoulder alone. Surprise lit his features.
Just so.
About tonight, if I had a lick of sense, I would tell him to buzz off and find another flower. I have 2 late tours scheduled. I can't break those engagements. Plus, I had to get Keet back in his cage and out of my bathroom, where I'd stashed him before bed. At least now he could hang in the living room near the windows overlooking the garden instead of being stuffed up in my room all the time.
Are you available tomorrow?
The way he said available made me think he meant something different than what rested on the surface. Sundays aren't usually as hectic, but I'm covering 2 hours for a friend. His chin dipped, as if he had expected the brush-off he apparently thought I had given him.
What about Monday?
That gave me a small window to find answers about the bangle and arm myself with questions to ask about this proposed alliance of his. We can do an early lunch in town. A smile overtook his face that caused my pulse to leap, bangle or no bangle?
Are you asking me out?
I choked on my sandwich and stole his lemonade to wash it down. Pretty sure my response still came out as a gurgle.
Your blush intoxicates, Sonishko.
He lifted half his sandwich, bit into it, and let his eyes roll closed. A pleased rumble issued from his chest.
I want to repay your hospitality. We will meet Monday, and I will take you out for lunch.
He cut his eyes my way.
As you requested.
Okay. I didn't dare risk a longer response until I had drained his glass to the bottom. Thankfully, eternal life came with one heck of a boost to the old immune system, and I couldn't catch anything from sharing. I'll pencil you in.
I make you nervous, he observed.
Around him, I felt like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. You're a stranger. A vampire. In my home. Even if said home had invited him in.
After Monday, we will have spoken three times. We will be strangers no longer. We will be...
His lips pursed.
Friends.
A laugh welled up in me. Sure. Once I showed him the sights, and he realized I had zero powers or influence, he would lose interest, and our friendship would crash and burn alongside his offer of alliance. I just hoped he let me keep the bangle as a consolation prize. Having experienced the helplessness of confinement behind iron bars, the misery of having my will suppressed, the horror of doubting my own sanity, I could appreciate an accessory that protected me from a fraction of the population, at least. Volkov, whether he knew it or not, had given me a gift potent with symbolism, as well as being practical for our future dealings.
I hear your doubt.
He finished his sandwich with equal rapture.
I will prove to you I am a constant man.
I schooled my features into a bland mask. Seeing him as a man was not part of the plan. Even his use of the word rang hollow. Maid vampires often referred to themselves as men or women, a habit some of them never broke. But born vampires had been taught the trick as camouflage to make them harder to distinguish from their brethren. Volkov was a vampire, and vampires, born or made, meant trouble for me. No matter how sincere those thunderous eyes blazed, I couldn't afford to let biology lead me around by the nose. The doorbell chose that moment to ring, a pealing sound as joyful as laughter, and I had a good idea who to expect. So it was no surprise, 3 minutes later, to find myself squaring off with Boaz over the threshold.
I wasn't sure you'd be awake yet.
I'm not a total lazabout.
No, but you worked late.
He inhaled, and the groan he released made my stomach tighten.
Is that a grilled cheese sandwich with extra butter I smell?
Yes, but I'm out of cheese. And bread. And I really didn't want him to discover I was harboring a vampire.
Don't hide from me.
Hello, I answered the door. I'm standing here talking to you. My guest? Yes. Well, okay. Him, I was hiding. I haven't been grocery shopping because of those late nights you mentioned.
Is there a problem?
Volkov purred over my shoulder. I closed my eyes on a groan, then squinted up at Boaz. This is not what it looks like.
It looks like you're cavorting with a vampire.
His gaze sharpened.
Are you out of cheese? Or is it O positive you're low on? Is this your boyfriend?
Volkov asked conversationally. No, he's my... I stalled out. Neighbor.
Friend,
Boaz corrected through a flash of teeth.
Her very close friend.
Denil Volkov, meet Boaz Pritchard. I gestured between them. Boaz is my best friend's big brother. His parents live next door.
You still live at home?
Volkov stood so close, his heat caressed my spine.
I